It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Well, welcome to the Jason in the House podcast. I'm Jason Chaffetz, and I really do appreciate joining us. I think you're really going to enjoy this because you've seen Joe Concha on Fox News. Vibrant personality, really got a great, witty grip on what's going on in the world and certainly in the world of the media. He's become a friend over the course of time there at Fox. And we did a background podcast with him, kind of how he became who he became. But I got to tell you, I really want to get his insight because we're in the crazy season. Not only is the media off the rails, but we've also got, you know, an election year. So a lot of crazy stuff happening and want to get his perspective. So thanks for joining us. Want to highlight a couple quick things in the news. Oh, and then obviously we're going to point out the stupid because there's always somebody doing something stupid somewhere. So a few things in the news. First of all, Mitch McConnell stepped down, or says he's going to step down, I should say. As the leader of the Senate Republicans. He's the minority leader in the United States Senate right now. Now, after, I don't know, decades of service and his departure, it should be noted that while I personally, I've been frustrated with many of his policies and approaches, there's two things that I think we should pay homage to. First of all, this United States Supreme Court would not be the United States Supreme Court in its makeup now if it weren't for Mitch McConnell. We would have Merrick Garland on the bench. We probably wouldn't have Amy Coney Barrett on the bench. Probably would have, you know, really struggled to get Justice Alito, Justice Kavanaugh. His ability to go through the process from start to finish and populate the Supreme Court the way it has been, Republicans, conservatives, and the nation have a lot to thank Mitch McConnell for in making that a reality. And also his ability to pass through the judges during the first Trump presidency, the 4 years that he was in there, was really some incredible work. And I also think you can thank him for his service and what he's done for the country. I'm not one to kick somebody on their way out the door. We could thank him for his service and the incredible work that they've done over the course of time. It'll be interesting to see who, when he runs again, which I don't believe is until 2026, who might replace him in an election year. You know, will it be a James Comer? I don't know. It'll be fascinating to see. But that is very newsworthy. And by all accounts, I think Democrats are probably going to lose the Senate. They really should, but we'll see how the election goes. Second thing that I wanted to mention is immigration. We talk a lot about immigration on this podcast, but I think it's worth reiterating. You know, I saw that MSNBC, I think it was Jen Psaki and Rachel Maddow were kind of mocking, laughing the idea why people in Virginia should care about immigration. Ha 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 ha. It's not just the pouring in of millions of illegal people. Look, they're here illegally. The first step was to break the law. I have a really hard time with that. I think we should prioritize the people who come here legally and lawfully. And it's not as if the United States doesn't do anything. We have traditionally brought in about 1 million people, legally and lawfully. And you know what? That's more than all other countries in the world combined. So that was just the legal component. But the illegal component, you're here in this country illegally, especially those people who have committed a crime, you have to be deported. You just have to be deported. But there are other aspects of immigration that I want people to understand. And this is why it's cutting in to President Biden's base and why it is a tier one issue now. And the liberal Democrat, traditional media, they just don't get it. Because what happens is these people are pouring in somewhere, and a lot of them are going to these big major cities, which are right at the heart of the Democratic core, the Democratic base. And guess what? All the social services that are offered, whether it be assistance programs, schooling programs, Meals on Wheels, I mean, you name it, that is going to be negatively impacted because all of a sudden now you have millions of people that are here illegally. And guess what? The incentive that these sanctuary cities have given them is free healthcare, free education, free housing. Some cases, they're giving them cash bonuses. They're treating them better than Americans, and they know it. So you look at the inner city people who are living in the inner cities. They're struggling to get by. Many of them are on these social service welfare programs. You're a homeless veteran, for instance, and you're looking over there at somebody who's there illegally, and you're this thinking, wait, I'm struggling to get by. I don't even have a house. You know, I went through a divorce and it destroyed me. And all of a sudden somebody comes in here illegally. And in some cases we're paying, as you know, the taxpayers are paying $400 a night to house some people. I mean, and they're not getting those benefits. They're struggling to get by. And then the Democrats would scratch their head. Wait, what? Why would African-Americans be going to Donald Trump? Why would Hispanic Americans be going to Donald Trump? Why would the youth vote be going to Donald Trump? And they are moving that direction. Now, it's not to say that everybody in those three categories is down and out and having a hard time with their luck. But if you look at the makeup of the inner city, that's largely the demographic of what many of these cities look like. And so that movement towards Donald Trump, as really Donald Trump has transformed the Republican Party to a working class party, the blue collar people who are working, moms and dads and people that are living paycheck to paycheck, they understand that life was better under Donald Trump and the Republicans. So what the Democrats just don't get is they just think it's funny. They just think, wait, they don't get it. But boy, this is going to be a real earthquake, if you will, in the presidential election. And that's a good segue to the stupid. So let's bring on the stupid, because there's always somebody doing something stupid somewhere. I need to highlight this again. MSNBC struggling, deciding, hey, you know, we're not going to take Donald Trump live because they are so clairvoyant. They can see in the future. They have already predicted that Donald Trump, when he gets up and speaks, is going to tell some sort of lie or mistruth, according to them. They've already made that decision. Now, they obviously don't believe that their viewers are smart enough to figure things out and look at things and hear a message. I challenge them on some of these recent speeches. Where did they think that Donald Trump has lied? And you know what? If he goes up and gives a speech, and you think that there's an issue with that or a conflict with it, then talk about it. And I see other networks, including the network that I work with, Fox News. It happens all the time, whether it's Joe Biden or Joe Manchin. It doesn't matter. People go up and give speeches. Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Mitch McConnell, anybody. I mean, they take some of these shots live because it's newsworthy. Donald Trump winning on Super Tuesday was newsworthy. And to exclude that speech from the public dialogue over there on another network, that's just pretty stupid. All right, time to bring on somebody who really understands the media. I recorded this conversation with Joe before Super Tuesday and before the State of the Union. But nevertheless, I think you're going to get a lot out of it. So let's join Joe Concha because he came in and sat down.
Joe Concha in the house. Thanks so much for joining us.
In the house. Who came up with that? Was that you? Or
that was, you know, it's one of my creative things. I said, nobody can spell Chaffetz.
That's true. Wait, let me see if I can do this. C-H-A-E-F-F-Z?
Close. Okay. C-H-A-F-F-E-T-Z.
What is that? Like Scotch Romanian?
What would you guess? Scotch Romanian?
Yeah.
Chaffetz is actually kind of Lithuanian,
really?
Eastern European. My mom's side of the family is like English, Irish, a little German. My dad's side of the family was like Lithuania, Belarus,
really?
The old Russia. Yeah. Like, And so, but nobody can pronounce it. Long A, Chaffetz.
Right.
Chaffetz. And it's very unique spelling with two Fs. There are Chaffetzes around, but most have one F.
Wow. In college, my program director for radio, my name was Joe Allen for a semester.
Really?
Because he's like, is it Chonka, Conka, Concha? I'm like, it's Concha. He goes, why don't you go with like a name that's easy to remember? So what you do is you take a first name and make it your last name.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
There you go.
So Joe Allen I was at one point.
So we're joined here with Joe Allen.
That's me.
The first ever podcast with Joe Allen.
Yes.
Thanks. You know, that's one of the fun things at Fox is you get to interact and meet people. And so I just want to chat today about... Yeah, we had you on a couple of years ago, actually.
That's right.
If you had a good bio piece. So if you want to go back and look at the old Joe Concha before he was Joe Allen.
Yeah, 2022.
That was a really good good interview about growing up and who you are, which is a lot of what this podcast usually is.
Okay. The human side of Fox.
The human side of like how you became, how you think, how did Joe become Joe?
Let me ask you a question before we go into this.
Yeah.
Who surprised you the most as far as when you heard their life story? You're like, I didn't know that about you.
Actually, the one that jumps out is Stuart Varney.
Stu?
First of all, Stuart Varney still tells me he's only done one podcast ever.
What?
And that was mine, and I was honored that he did it.
Wow.
His life story and what he went through growing up was totally different.
Really?
Than anything I had possibly imagined.
Huh.
Now, not a lot had been written about sort of his bio and what he's up, but his early life is just crazy.
Struggle and crazy or just
a little
war?
Bit of struggle, but he was a nomad. That guy traveled the earth.
Oh.
Sometimes by himself, sometimes with other people, but he'd go spend, you know, years traveling the earth, and he has so many stories about being in the outback of Australia, and I mean, it's just unbelievable stories, which is not the Stuart Varney that I see on Fox Business, who's, you know, and then he decided to get serious about life, went to the London School of Economics, and which is a pretty liberal, you know, education.
Yeah.
But then, you know, eventually, you know, became a very conservative type minded person. But his journey and his story, what I thought we were going to talk about and what ended up coming out of the podcast was totally different.
I watch his show.
Hemmer was a lot like that. Bill Hemmer.
Hemmer too, huh?
Yeah. Hemmer. Interesting. Hemmer in his early life, Bill Hemmer, went and decided he wanted to see the world and his knowledge of the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've seen him at the billboard, right? And doing all his mastery of
it was every county.
Iowa every state. And every county. Exactly. But when you talk to Bill Hemmer, you will quickly understand that he can describe in detail what India's like or Bangladesh. And, you know, it's all firsthand knowledge that he not only had the experience, but he remembers it and can articulate it. And in his office, he has pictures and it's really interesting. So,
okay.
I'm fascinated by that.
I wouldn't have guessed Hemmer and Varney if you gave me 20 guesses to start.
That you had know? It very different than...
Yeah. It's just, they got into broadcasting and, you know, their big successes on various networks.
Now, look, you're out there talking about the media and there's all... You know, we do a segment on this podcast before we get to this interview. There's always somebody doing something stupid somewhere.
That's
right?
True.
Right. And certainly that's true with the media. But I wanted to talk to you more about the media and how they've just gone off the rails. And, it, you know, we're always talking about it at 60,000 feet, and it just seems like, well, yeah, they have. But I look at, you know, we're pretty close in age. I'm older than you, but we're pretty close. And
39, 36.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But I look back at how trusted the media was when I was growing up.
Sure.
I mean, it was the big networks, you know.
Cronkite, Mudd, Brinkley, Walters. I mean, you trusted these people.
Walter John Cronkite, Chancellor.
Chancellor, yes. Right?
Yeah.
Cronkite was once the most trusted man in America. Imagine a member of the media actually having that title, right? But that's who Uncle Walter
Murrow.
Was.
It's just like, you know, I just watched with my wife again for like the 27th time, the Apollo 13 movie. That is such an exceptional movie.
That was the most watched broadcast ever. 150 million people tuned in.
But at the beginning of that movie, they're showing Walter Cronkite, and he takes off his glasses because he just can't believe that in the scene in the movie is, you know, looking at when Armstrong was on the moon.
Yeah.
And that moment in American history, now I was a wee baby, like can't remember, you know, I wish I could. But that level of trust to where we are now, I mean, what's it doing to the country?
It's destroying the country. It's dividing the country. Gallup had a poll out last year. 83% of Americans believe the media divides the country more than it informs it. Now, think about that for a second. They've taken a side. I'm making some very obvious observations here.
Right.
And I think the reason I think there's probably even some journalists out there that got into this business to do investigative reporting and to be objective and do the job the way it used to. And then they realize that you're not getting a promotion if you do that. That if you only attack one side, then that gets you elevated within an organization. I remember Dasha Burns, she's with NBC News, and she had reported that she had a conversation with John Fetterman. This was leading up to the Senate race against Dr. Oz. He was in the race at that point, obviously. And she said that he had trouble making basic conversations, right? Yeah. All she did was pass along to viewers what she had observed. That's what a journalist does. And she was eviscerated by everyone, particularly on social media, which really is, it's basically kerosene on a raging fire already as far as things spreading in a hurry. And people wanted her fired for that. So she got back in line and probably just said, okay, I'll only report poorly on Republicans or conservatives going forward. So I think that has a lot to do with it. You're not getting your next contract if you decide to call out both sides. Look at Catherine Herridge, who used to work at this network, is one of the best investigative reporters of our era. And CBS just fired her. Not just fired her. They wanted to seize her records, including her sources, which completely exposes them. So when you see this stuff, I don't even know what to make of it at this point, except that the people running these networks are obviously profoundly not even journalists anymore. They're activists. Well, the whole goal is to keep Democrats in power.
Well, what were some of the inflection points where this transition happened?
Obama, I think the 2007, 2008, journalists wanted to be a part of history by helping to get the first black candidate to run for president elected as president. I see that as the turning point, quite frankly. I think cable news to a certain extent probably helped fuel that. CNN used to be objective.
What happened first? You know, it's sort of the chicken or the egg.
Oh, sure.
Was it cable news that was reflecting what was going on, or did cable news help perpetuate, do you think? Or was it both?
It's both, right? I think social media ultimately, and Twitter especially, because now everybody's exposed, right? It used to be where if you're a reporter, or whether that's on TV or in print, you had an editor that had to approve or at least check over, or editors for that matter, your work, right? And nothing made it to air or in print until you went through those filters and that process. Yeah. Now with Twitter, anything any journalist, I'm using scare quotes right now, wants to share, and they expose themselves in a big hurry. Look at it this way. I wrote probably – I can't find too many other people. I probably can count on one hand. I wrote a book about Joe Biden and his life, right? Mm. It was called Come On, Man, The Truth Behind Joe Biden's Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Presidency, which is stolen from a children's book. But fine. You know, I repurposed it. Right. I admit it. It's all good. I can't find anybody else writing of any prominence anyway. I'm not saying I'm prominent, but I'm on national television, who's writing books about Joe Biden. Donald Trump, meanwhile, Jonathan Carl, who's supposed to be, you know, he was the president of the White House Correspondents Association, supposed to be the objective one at ABC News. He's written three about Trump. And they're all profoundly negative. Maggie Haberman. Yeah. Oh, she's a great reporter. She only talks about Trump. She never talks about the current person in power. I could go down the line, but Jim Acosta, where's your book on Joe Biden? Why aren't you doing what you used to do during the Trump era, which is ask the press secretary tough questions? He couldn't run quickly enough from the James S. Brady briefing room when Joe Biden was elected, because he would actually have to ask him tough questions. I know I'm totally rambling here, but I think
it's not as if there's no material. Right? I mean, you could see it on a daily basis, and they don't ask basic, simple, hard questions.
No.
It's just, you know, and the ice cream cone tour, I mean, that doesn't elicit even, you know, it used to be that you had a Sam Donaldson or
that's right.
that would pepper the question. Britt Hume would pepper questions at people.
Yeah,
like, where are these people that, you know, I mean, Reagan was hounded by these people.
That's true. Now you only have a Ducey or a Heinrich, right, as in Peter and Jackie. And then everybody else in that room, when they do ask a so-called tough question, it's always so open-ended. And then there's never that follow-up that we saw with like Sarah Sanders, or I just saw Kayleigh McEnany on the elevator, or with Kayleigh, right? So it's a very simple question. You can't possibly go up there and blame Republicans for what's happening at the border, right? And Karine Jean-Pierre does this every day. And she says this over and over, and it drives me nuts. I wish I could be in that room. Congress must act.
Yes.
They did act. In May of 2022, they passed the Secure the Border Act, right? So you have to follow up with specifics. Karine, does the president support wall construction? Because it works. And I want to hear her explain why he doesn't support that. Does he support Remain in Mexico? Does he support eviscerating catch and release? Ask specific questions.
Well, I want to ask, hey, the Democrats had the House, the Senate, and the presidency for the first 2 years, of the Biden administration. Why didn't they introduce a bill, and why didn't they pass a bill? Like, that's not on Republicans. You know, that seems like a basic question.
Precisely. That, yeah. And think about the way it's couched now. Republicans objected the border bill,
right,
and we could have secured the border. It wasn't going to secure anything. It's a toothless bill. And they say because Trump told them to. No, Trump said that's a bad bill. Yeah. And they agreed. So whoever those senators were, I mean, who was behind that exactly? You know better than I do. Who were the idiots on the Republican side who thought that bill was good enough to sign off on? Was it like John
That's
Thune?
A whole nother podcast,
really?
Right there,
John. Okay. I just, those three things I just listed, wall construction, remain in Mexico, catch and release, done. Unless that's in a bill, I wouldn't sign it either.
Well, and look, the point is that these types of questions need to be peppered. I don't mind if they go to both sides,
sure,
but right now it's just one side. So I go back and I remember one of my favorite shows, because it was amazing what it did and what it exposed. But All the President's Men was like a great story, right?
Movie,
a great movie.
There was a show? Oh,
great,
okay.
Great movie, right?
Redford
Robert
and,
Redford
Dustin
and Dustin Hoffman portraying Woodward and Bernstein, trying to get to the facts of what happened. But that kind of journalism on a bipartisan way is just non-existent. And I think if, and I've mentioned this several times on this podcast, Trey Gowdy and I, who both served as chairman of the Oversight Committee, we were on Judiciary together, we were on Oversight together. We both left Congress after, you know, having been there 8 years, not totally aligned in our timing. I was there before him and left before him, but is how unbelievably disappointed we were in the national media. Mm. And I kind of like the way Trey says it, is he would say, the national media never met an investigation that Republicans started that they ever thought was justified.
Right.
But they never met a Democratic investigation they ever thought should end. It just continue on in perpetuity.
Yeah.
But somehow we turned that corner. But on the other hand, I think the public's also voting with their feet, right?
They are. Yeah. Oh, so a couple of things to unpack here.
Yeah.
You talked about inflection points before. Another where it may have started, right, was with Woodward and Bernstein, as far as them being great reporters, right, that took their time in order to pursue a story for years, quite frankly. Ben Bradley made sure of it, the editor of the Washington Post, that we're not going to print with this until we have everything completely and totally covered. But then they became stars, didn't they?
Yeah.
And you got Robert Redford playing you. You know, have you seen Bob Woodward? That ain't Robert Redford, you know, even the young version of him. But fine. So you have Redford and Hoffman, and they're in lights and everything. And I think the celebrity side of this business really began to take hold of everything.
Yeah.
So I think a lot more journalists now would easily take an appearance on Stephen Colbert or Seth Meyers over any Emmy Award. Because they want the celebrity part of it, right?
Yeah.
So you had a question there, though. I know you did. Crap.
Well, no, that was the point, is that there is these inflection points where there was investigative journalism, but then there wasn't the investigative journalism. And that's that they go one direction, but not the other. And I think you're right. I think the timing with Obama is something I hadn't really thought through.
Yeah, you mentioned voting with your feet. That's what I wanted to touch on.
Yeah, and leaving and saying, you're just an East Coast liberal newsletter, New York Times. I'm sorry, but that's what you are.
When I was with The Hill, we did this report on all the major newspaper endorsements around the country. We looked at 59 top newspapers in terms of readership, and 57 of the 59 endorsed Hillary Clinton.
Wow.
Only two Donald Trump. And what did that get Hillary? Got her a set of steak knives and a concession speech, right?
Yeah.
In other words, in all these states, people were being told this is how you should vote and why. And people said, yeah, F you. I know what I see and I know how I'm going to vote. And that was the end of it. So that's the good news, I guess, if you are conservative.
And one of them, and by the way, well, what's it? The Las Vegas Review Journal went Trump's way, I think.
It did.
But did he lose Nevada?
He lost Nevada. Yeah. You're right about that. Yeah.
I don't know what the other one was. It was
in Florida somewhere.
Trump or something. But yeah. But they are kind of voting with their feet. And I think the country's lost a lot. Like I look at my own state of Utah, and I used to be chief of staff to the governor of Utah prior to my going to Congress. And, you know, we're a fairly small state compared to a lot of other major states. But the lack of journalism, actual journalism, and exposing what goes on in a legislative session or throughout the year in government is minimal to none.
There's no local news left, right? It's all, I worked for The Messenger. We talked about this in a green room recently, and it just imploded. $50 million to start and burn through cash in about 6 months. Right. The advertising just isn't there. So the reason why I bring that up, I'm certainly not happy about it, is because more and more local journalists are no longer employed. Now it's just basically AI, right? Writing the stories. Yeah. But is there anybody there at that town hall meeting in your local town? No, because the money isn't there to pay anybody anymore.
Somebody who's going to put something out on X. And that's a worry, because I think there needs to be a little bit more objectivity, but it's hard to understand who's telling the truth, who's not. You're right. Without the editor that you can trust, that you can believe in, that you can say, hey, they're giving it to us straight. And I think the country's kind of worse off for it.
Sure. And people ask me, and look, I'm not saying this because I'm sitting in Fox News radio studios right now, and I don't think our bosses are listening to this, and they're going to be like, oh, good job, Joe Brown nosing. But honestly, when people ask me where can I get straight news, I say Bret Baier, I say Martha McCallum, I say Bill Hemmer. I think MSNBC and CNN does not have straight news people the way we do, right? Or Bill Malusian at the border. Right. Where's CNN's guy at the border? Where's MSNBC's guy at the border? Right? I could go down the list as far as.
Well, look at the international reporting that we get, you know, with what's going on with the war. I mean, they've been doing
Trey Yangst is incredible.
We did a podcast with Alex Hogan, for instance. She's amazing.
That's right.
You know, and she's been embedded there for a long time. And the amount of resources that it takes and a commitment from a news organization, you do have to have some deep pockets but it makes all the difference in actually having really good reporting.
That's the thing. And that's what Fox has. At least we have a news side that I think is objective. I think really does a good job.
And I do think Fox does a very good job of regularly inviting
Democrats
to come on. Now, surprising to me, they don't take them up on the offers nearly as much. You look at what Gavin Newsom did by coming in and going on with Sean Hannity.
Yeah, with DeSantis, right?
But I think that was a win for everybody, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It showed that he could go into the so-called lion's den. But Sean, everybody thought it was just going to be Ron DeSantis and Sean Hannity ganging up on Newsom. And Sean got praise, even from people who really wanted to criticize it. So that's all I'm saying. Yeah, the opinion side leans right. Of course it does. But you show me a show that has like a Jessica Tarloff, who's always very prepared on the Five, that pushes back quite effectively on that
Harold
show.
Harold Ford is not a Republican.
No, he's
on the Five, and he does a very good job of saying, I'm just saying Fox makes not just a token effort. They make a real effort to say, hey, we want to have both sides. Because I think it's the interaction and the conflict of ideas that people actually want to see. If you just want to hear a regurgitation of, you know, only your side, then yeah, there are products out there for you. But
echo chambers are boring, right?
But I think the success of the network in general, and people just don't seem to get that over at some of the other cable news and other. They just. But there is this. Give me your perspective on this, because Trump derangement syndrome is true. It's true in families. It's true in, I mean, it's out there, and it's certainly out there in the media. But he is gold in terms of ratings, and he knows it, and everybody knows it.
Sure.
But I don't think they've ever, when I say they, traditional standard media, some of the, they've never taken the time to understand who Donald Trump is and why he appeals to so many blue collar people that aren't necessarily his peers.
Right. The billionaire, Who, right. But nobody in Ohio
but
or Michigan,
why is
Wisconsin.
That, Joe? Why is he able to
interact? How does he connect?
Well, he's authentic. There's two parts. There's authentic. The connection, but then there's also the Trump derangement syndrome where yeah. if they don't connect, they're like, they wouldn't even consider it.
Because think about where our national media is located, Washington and New York.
Right.
How did they vote in 2020 or 2016? Like Trump maybe got like 8% of the vote in Manhattan. Oh, in yeah. Washington, D.C., oh, I think it was even less than
less
that.
Less than 10%.
And then that conformity that we talked about before, right? Yeah. So I think that lends to it. But think about what happened when CNN, when Discovery came in and they hired Chris Licht and the bosses over there said, okay, we're going to try to have more Republicans on this network, more conservatives. We're going to try to be the old CNN that we used to be, like under Bernard Shaw in the Gulf War, when you would go to CNN. Anytime there's breaking news, it was like a spare tire, right? That you went to it, right? Like almost like by muscle memory. And then they revolted internally and drove this guy out in less than a year, this president, because God forbid he put Donald Trump on a town hall on the network. And CNN could not get enough of Donald Trump in 2016. He was on town halls. He did interviews with Tapper and Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo. I could go down the line. And now they won't even carry his remarks live. Yeah. And you got the Jake Tappers of the world, who is the most pious, pompous ass in all of journalism, who used to write me anytime I wrote anything critical of him, right, to lecture me. I don't mind sharing this now, but you have like Tapper coming on like, well, we will not allow Donald Trump's lies to be shared with our audience. Coming up next, Adam Schiff joins us for an in-depth conversation about Russia and the impact they will have in the 2024 election. Shut up. I mean, that's the whole hypocrisy of it. But I think a lot of it's performance art. I think these folks are liberal. I think they want to conform to get their next contract. But I think a lot of it also is what will get me on the pages of Mediaite. Oh, right.
Yeah.
It's melodramatic.
The other, this is a couple of weeks ago, but Donald Trump was giving some comments and it was similar to the story you related, but it was had to do with Rachel Maddow. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was in Congress, I actually went on her show, I wouldn't say several times, but I regularly appeared and I thought, mm-hmm. hey, as a Republican, I get to go talk to a liberal Democratic audience and do my yeoman's best to try to convince them that I had some worthy points and I had great respect for her and we had good interaction. Mm-hmm. But I watched her a couple of weeks ago and Donald Trump started to give some remarks and then they immediately took him down because she said they were going to, you know, not allow him to spew his lies. Now, and I thought, how clairvoyant of you. Mm-hmm. You know what he's going to say before he's even said it. You've already made up your mind that what he's saying is an untrue. How do you know that what he's saying isn't the truth?
No.
Because Donald Trump was right on a lot of things.
Yeah.
That they always dismissed. And he has the best intelligence service in the world. Give the guy some credit for maybe listening and taking those briefings and digesting those. And
sure.
But I couldn't believe that they took down his words, so to speak, before he even made them.
Right. After in 2015, 2016, they carry them live. Well, yeah. Because they love the ratings and they never thought he could win. So there was no risk. Now they see a risk because, well, if we allow Donald Trump to speak directly to our audience, he may make a cogent argument around the border, for example, or inflation or trade or energy or education or foreign policy. So then instead they dump out of there. They got the Brady Bunch panel of like nine people telling you how horrible he is. And then you just see him talking, but you don't hear the audio. It's just laughable. And that's why our ratings here at Fox are triple of what they are at CNN, quadruple in some cases. Mm. MSNBC, we're easily doubling. Yeah. Again, they want to split that pie and just try to appeal to a very liberal audience and not try to bring anybody else in. Go ahead. Be my guest.
Well,
more
it's
Democrats
not like,
watch this network than they watch those networks.
And it's not like Joe Biden's doing a whole lot of town halls. I mean, how many ice cream licking contests can we have broadcast to us?
You had a great line in the green room. I'm disappointed we couldn't use it with Bill Hemmer and Aishna before as far as who eats ice cream in February.
Yeah.
In New York. It's not a pleasant experience. And he's talking about American hostages while holding this big, like he got like a double scoop too. But who gets a double scoop at that age? I mean, I don't get it. And then that whole interview with Seth Meyers was just so contrived, so phony.
So canned.
Yeah, completely. He was totally given the questions beforehand. I mean, how can you be proud of yourself? And then I got to see, who was it? Kelly O'Donnell, NBC News, Jennifer Jacobs, Bloomberg. They reported that Joe Biden made a surprise appearance with Seth Meyers. Well, as if he directed the motorcade. You know what? Let's go crash 30 Rock. Maybe Seth Meyers is taping at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I'll just walk onto the set. We knew about this for days. I literally pitched Hemmer on it over the weekend. Like, hey, he's appearing. You should have Chaffetz and me on.
A surprise visit. Yeah.
You're listening to Jason in the House. We'll be back with more of my conversation with Joe Concha right after this.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
When Harry Styles shows up, this town goes crazy and they go nuts because I've seen them line up outside, you know, Jimmy Fallon's show and all that. But Joe Biden making a drive-by surprise visit is such a joke. That is funny. Foreshadow for you, for us. I mean, is it highly predictable? We know exactly what's going to happen in this election over the next several months leading. I think there's so many eyes. I think the Democrats and the liberals know Joe Biden is one step away from falling right on his face.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting through these big major events and the gaffes that he has, I don't know. I think we've kind of reached a point where they have to report this. They can't deny it anymore. When they, you know the stats better than I do, but a massive portion of Democrats think the guy is too old. And I don't think it's his age. I just think he looks, acts, feels so feeble.
Yeah. Yeah. 81 is fine.
Right.
My dad's 81. My dad is exactly 2 weeks older than Joe Biden.
Right.
And he still does consulting work. He was an accountant.
Right.
Went to school at night while my brother and sister, after they were born, and eventually worked his way up to CFO of a printing company somewhere in the swamps of Jersey and earned a nice living for himself. And still, because he doesn't play golf and he can't sit still, he still consults for small businesses. And it's like a 4 or 5 hour day for him. That's fine.
Right.
We're talking about the commander in chief of our armed forces. And you look at his schedule, and I posted, I think you follow me on Twitter. I post Joe Biden's schedule on a daily basis, and I am shocked. A, that he gets the daily intelligence briefing sometimes as late as 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah. Do terrorists sleep in on Tuesdays? How does this work exactly? And then today he has one thing on his schedule, and then he calls a lid. Tuesday has something on his schedule, and he calls a lid at noon. And then 40% of his presidency. He's been on vacation more than Clark Griswold, this guy. He's always going off, and it's always a long weekend, too. Friday morning, come back Monday. Boy, I wish I had that. So if Joe Biden wanted to be a golf starter, I'd be like, fine, good. Go to your local club and do that job. But not as president.
Golf starter.
And then I see the polls, and I see – look, I don't look at national polls. I look at them overall for trends, but I look at states, individual states, right? And in Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, Trump is up decisively, and he's up decisively in Michigan. You win those four states, you're the next president. Doesn't matter what happens in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, because Ohio and Florida have now gone red. So they're no longer like the bellwethers.
Right.
Win those four. Can Donald Trump, if he doesn't get convicted, can he win Georgia, Arizona, Nevada and Michigan? Absolutely. So that's why I think he's an overwhelming favorite right now.
I think Democrats are really in trouble in Michigan. I think they're really in trouble.
Liberals revolting. That's the problem.
Well, and all of these, union workers and all these people in the automotive industry, the way Joe Biden has approached electric vehicles.
That's right.
And said, hey, we want to put the combustion engine, make it a dinosaur and put them out of business. People hear that. They know that. All right. Last thing I want to kind of foreshadow. I thought Donald Trump made a mistake by not participating in a debate.
I agree.
A, because of the principle of you should just debate, even if you're, 100 points ahead.
Yeah.
But it also, I think, lessened his moral high standing, if you will, to debate Biden. Mm-hmm. That's the real prize, right? You got to... When we had three debates going into 2020.
Two, actually.
And one of them got canceled.
That was
my point, is the foreign policy, which is, look at the morass that we're in now.
That's right.
That one got canceled, and that should have never happened. And it worked to Joe Biden's benefit. And we better, as a nation, not go through this presidential election with no debates.
You know why the second debate was canceled?
Yes, right? Because the C-SPAN
guy is going to... Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch, who I know, like him. He got me reservations at his restaurant not too long ago. You know, used to be the White House communications director for all of 11 days, I believe.
Yeah, less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. They call it a Scaramucci.
I got along with the Mooch pretty well, yeah.
Yeah, fine. And he's turned on Trump and whatever. You know, that's I think that's also performance art to a certain extent. But I bought this up for a reason. Oh, yeah, because of Steve Scully. So and that obviously right. he tweeted that out, remember?
Yeah.
What should I ask Trump to Mooch? And he's like, oh, he thought it was a direct message.
Yeah.
And then they cancel it and they blame COVID. So that saved Biden. Again, fixed fight. Yes, Donald Trump absolutely should have debated during the primaries. I'm not saying every debate, but A, he could use the at-bats. Because people say he's a great debater. I don't think he's a great debater. I think against Joe Biden, he should have just said, here's my policy, but let's hear more from Joe.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Give up the floor, right?
Yield the time, yeah. as we said in Congress. I yield the time to the
gentleman. I yield the time,
gentleman.
Yeah, to the president. Let's hear what you're going to do as far as fixing the border, for example. And when he's charming Trump, I like that Trump.
Right.
Right? When he's angry Trump, it turns everybody off. And particularly that first debate in 2020, he was angry and he wasn't prepared, quite frankly. All of that said, he should have debated this time around. And you don't even have to debate DeSantis or Haley or Chris Christie. You just go up there, pretend they almost don't exist, and make it a debate with Joe Biden, even though he isn't there. Mm-hmm. And right now, every day, Donald Trump's to say, I want to debate Joe Biden now.
Heard him say that.
Yeah.
But the idea of breaking it through and coming up with something palatable, I think we're going to miss something as a nation if we don't get that done.
And I could guarantee you. In fact, we save tapes around here. We save tapes. Okay. There won't be any debates.
Yeah.
Biden will say, it is beneath me to share a stage with this insurrectionist, this man who is destroying democracy, and I'm not going to do it. And the stupid media will cheer him, putting him up on some sort of moral higher plane for doing
it. He's just lying. He can't tell the truth. He's yeah.
What's CNN and MSNBC going to do if he does debate? Are they going to dump out of that too?
Yeah.
Right? They'll have to show it, but they'll probably be live fact checking on this on the screen, but only of Trump and Biden.
I still don't think Biden will actually be the nominee. But
really?
Again, I've been saying that for a long time.
Give me your scenario then. What happens? Florida convention, Chicago, Michelle Obama, Gavin Newsom?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've had some wild guesses out there, mm-hmm. but I think Democrats have put themselves in a real box, but I think they know they've got a losing candidate and their number two is also a losing candidate.
Oh God, yes.
So I don't think they know where to go and what to do. I ultimately think that it's Barack Obama who kind of makes this hard call.
Interesting.
And I think he is more the party leader, and I think the Biden administration is sort of an extension of a third term of
with the JV Obama. Though, not the bar.
Well,
you don't have a Jay Johnson running Homeland Security.
The staff underneath them mm-hmm. that is the same staff that was underneath Obama.
Makes sense.
So, but who actually gets to be out front? I don't know.
I think Newsom would do worse than Biden. I think he would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the numbers and the slickness and everything else.
Nothing authentic about him. That's a problem.
Nobody wants to be California at this point.
You're right. Make America California again. No, that's not a good slogan. Yeah. And then Michelle Obama, she hasn't worked in decades.
Well, she's never run anything.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So once you get past, you know, it's all foam and no beer, right? Yeah. Once you put her up there and she's going to start articulating her foreign policy as it pertains to China or the Ukraine war or how you're going to fix the border. Your husband was the deporter in chief. That's what they called him from the left. You're going to reinstate that? I just don't. It'll be like exciting for 3 days, and then she's going to actually have to explain herself, and people will be like, we got serious problems. We got no time for this.
Yeah.
So I think Trump is in the driver's seat. The only thing that stops him, but I saw a poll yesterday, and it was remarkable. I want to say it was from Harris and Harvard. Donald Trump's lead over Biden increases if he is charged with a crime. He goes up 8 points.
It's the craziest thing we've ever seen.
And I believe, I keep hearing, well, if he's convicted, then people won't vote for him. I think he becomes more of a martyr if that happens, because these aren't serious charges against him.
No, no. In America, can't regurgitate or articulate, wait, why are you doing this? So,
yeah.
Joe Concha in the house. Really appreciate Joe Allen.
Joe Allen, thank you. We are way too well-dressed for a podcast. I mean,
yes. This has been ties are tight. And we appreciate Joe, good friend. Great seeing you on Fox all the time.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on Jason in the House.
The pleasure's all on this side of the microphone. Thank you, Jason.
Like I said, I always enjoy chatting with Joe Concha. I really have a lot of fun with him. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. I want to remind people they can listen ad-free. You can listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. Need you to rate this one? Go over there, click the button, rate it. I would sincerely appreciate it. And subscribe to it every week. We got fun, exciting guests. Scroll through the list of all the ones we've done. Find your favorite personality in there. And I think you'll learn a lot about who they are, where they're coming from, what they believe in, and how they got to where they got to. So please join us again next week. And again, thank you for joining us.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.